Hello, this is Keith Livingston. Thanks for joining me. The interview you're about to hear is between myself and Tanya Martinez of ExpertVillage.com. Now, if you'd like to learn more about hypnosis or NLP, please visit hypnosis101.com, hypnosisnow.com, or advancingideas.com. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy the interview.
Hello, this is Keith.
Hi, Keith. This is Tanya Martinez from Expert Village. How are you doing?
Tanya, I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Good.
Why don't you give me a little biography on yourself? Just tell me. I write like a little, it can be up to like 5 sentences, but give me information that you would want me to put in your biography.
In 1993, I got my first hypnosis training and decided to get out of the corporate world and into the world of helping people, and I'm doing hypnosis and what's called NLP, which is a related field, ever since. And I've been a hypnotherapist. I train hypnotherapists and NLP practitioners and become somewhat of an expert on certain subjects. For instance, phobias. I've been interviewed by... I've been on the John Waltz show. I've been interviewed by tons of magazines and newspapers. And
wonderful. You know, actually, when I heard your voice, you sound like, you said you've been on several different radio and TV shows. You sound like you have a TV voice.
A radio voice. I have a radio face, too.
You're funny. That's funny.
I was a DJ for a little bit.
Well, there we go. I wasn't far off, was I? Okay. My first question is, what happens when you're under hypnosis?
Well, we don't like to use the word under, and I'll tell you why. And this will explain why. It's because people have the perception that hypnosis is one person controlling another, like they're
right,
under
right.
the power of another. So we like to use the word in hypnosis. So what happens when you're in hypnosis is that you're conscious, logical mind, the part that you usually think with, gets relaxed and agrees to take a little vacation. And you get to talk to the part of the mind, the other than conscious or unconscious or subconscious mind, that really controls where a lot of these automatic and semi-automatic human behaviors are, things like habits and emotions and even certain physiological processes. So it's a place where you can go to get more control over what's happening inside your mind.
Okay.
Is that the answer that you wanted, or were you looking more for what is the process of getting into hypnosis?
No, that's my next question. You read my mind.
So how do you get into hypnosis?
Yes.
You relax. You focus your attention usually on one thing. You can get to it any number of ways. You can either focus your attention on one thing completely to where everything else sort of drifts out of your mind, or you can sort of let your mind wander. But the idea is the conscious mind then is either occupied by focusing so intently on one thing, or it's on vacation, essentially.
Okay. If I was under hypnosis, if I was in hypnosis, would I remember anything after I was hypnotized?
Yeah, it varies, but most people remember most everything. That's one of the most common myths in hypnosis, is that you'll forget everything, you can't hear anything. You really are very aware in hypnosis. Now, some people report that they don't remember things that happened in hypnosis, and there are sometimes a hypnotist will suggest amnesia for a particular suggestion. But it's more like if you've ever sat through a boring lecture and you come out of it and you don't remember everything that was said.
Yeah.
It's like that. It's a very natural amnesia. Yeah.
Wow.
It's not odd in any way.
So how does it feel?
It feels great. It feels like, it's the same kind of mental feeling for me anyway as when I've had an hour and a half massage. You know, you feel so good, you don't want to move.
During or after?
A little of both. It takes you a little while to kind of get back to the idea that, you should move your arms and legs and mm-hmm. and move around.
Do you know you're in hypnosis when you're going through it? Like, do you know when that moment happens, when you're in hypnosis?
It depends what kind of education you have about it. Hypnosis is not an unnatural state. It's something that happens to everybody during every day. There are things called ultradian rhythms. They're essentially, biorhythms that happen within the course of a day. And people go into hypnosis or a very similar state about every 90 minutes on average. You know, when you're sitting at your desk and you're thinking about dinner or something, and you're literally, your mind is more at dinner than it is at your desk. Well, that's hypnosis. The reason that people don't get the benefit out of it as much as they could is that they don't then give suggestions to themselves when they're right in that particular condition.
Okay.
I forget what the question was.
You answered the question perfect.
Okay.
Can anybody be hypnotized?
Well, everybody goes into hypnosis, yes. But it's very, very difficult to hypnotize somebody against their will. So if somebody doesn't want to, or doesn't want to, you know, if I've had people that have come to me as a hypnotherapist, and they won't do anything that I ask them to do, and so, of course, they're not successful in achieving hypnosis. But, you know, if you're willing and reasonably intelligent, it can be done, yes.
Can children be hypnotized?
Children exist in a state of hypnosis most of the time.
Really?
Yeah.
So they're the easiest to work with?
You know, in some ways, yeah, because they don't have the, you know, if you tell an adult, for instance, to close their eyes and pretend that their eyes won't open because they're glued shut, an adult may have some resistance to that. They may think, well, that's silly. A kid will do it, you know, at the drop of a hat. So they're certainly easier in that way. And if you've ever seen a child, I have a 3-year-old, and you know, sometimes he watches TV, and he is so engaged in that television show. That's a trance. In fact, all of us are in trance when we're really into a television show or a movie or reading a good book or when we're driving down the road and, you know, I don't know if you've been on any long road trips, but I've been on some, and you come to a sign, and it says leaving some town, and you go, well, I don't remember going through that town.
Yeah.
You're in hypnosis.
Man, I'm being hypnosis all the time. My mind's always wandering.
Well, there you go. It'd probably be very easy for you because you've got a good imagination.
I just always call it like I don't know, that I have a short attention span. That's what I always say. But maybe I just choose to have a short attention span is what it is.
Well, you know, you can't use one part of your brain all the time. I mean, if you're focusing on work, you need to go into your creative side every once in a while, let your mind wander and relax in order to get those ideas to come back to work with. That's how it works for me. You know, have you ever gone to sleep with a problem on your mind and woken up with the answer?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So there's a part of your mind that's in there working away on things and mulling over things all the time, and it's doing it essentially in a lot of ways without your awareness. And that's the part of the mind that really carries the power in human beings in terms of habits and emotions and even, as I mentioned before, some physiological processes. And it's usually sort of out of our reach. We can't get in there to give it messages necessarily. So that's what hypnosis does. It allows us to get into that subconscious or unconscious mind and say, hey, let's see if we can do things this way.
Tell me, now that you're going along those lines, God, I'm learning a lot. This is really interesting. Is hypnosis similar to meditation?
Yeah. Typically, you know, there are all different kinds of meditation, all different forms. Typically, meditation is hypnosis without suggestion. Now, suggestion is the part where you get the ideas in there and reprogram the way things work. Down in there. Meditation, you know, it has wonderful benefits. There's certainly all kinds of beneficial chemicals, for instance, that get released into your system when you allow this conscious mind that we focus on so much in society to take a break. And that's what meditation does for you. But typically, meditation doesn't contain the suggestion part of hypnosis.
So tell me this. In hypnotherapy, is spirituality a big part of hypnotherapy? Because it seems like you guys would probably see things that other people don't see.
You know, it can be, but it's not necessarily.
Okay. Can hypnosis help self-esteem?
Oh, absolutely. You see the way that your mind works. Your mind kind of goes around and gets ideas that are connected to what we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
It comes up from your subconscious or your unconscious. So in hypnosis, we can instruct the unconscious mind to begin feeding the conscious mind memories and thoughts of pleasant experiences, the kinds of experiences that build self-esteem, as opposed to the kinds of thoughts and experiences and feelings that detract from self-esteem. Now, everybody has something in their life that they've done well and they've felt pride of. And imagine what your life would be like if you went through and you continually thought of all the things that you did well and you felt an amazing sense of pride about. Literally, what would happen is your self-esteem would grow.
I think when you have a low self-esteem, sometimes you're negative.
Sure.
Just aligning yourself with more positive thoughts, and, you know?
Well, you don't have to put other people down to feel good.
Exactly. Yeah, because you're exactly right. I think that happens a lot when people have self-esteem issues. Well, we all do, don't we?
Sure.
It doesn't really go away.
Sure.
But you just deal with them.
Well, you know, self-esteem is not always called for. You know, there are some times when people should feel bad and feel bad about what they've done, and that's the motivating process that continues to move us toward doing better things.
Right. So it can definitely help self-esteem. What would be the process of, like, how would you do that in hypnosis?
Well, I'll tell you a story about another hypnotherapist, a very famous hypnotherapist, Milton H. Erickson. And Milton Erickson had a guy that he was working with, and it was, I believe it was in front of an audience of doctors. And this fellow didn't have much to recommend him to anybody, so Erickson hypnotized him and took him back through some memories and finally found that as a boy, he was very, very proud of his penmanship. And so he had this guy write something down with his nice penmanship and had him go around and show it to all the doctors and make all the doctors comment on how wonderful the penmanship was. And then essentially Erickson gave him suggestions that said, you will continue to review your life and continue to find these experiences in which you had pride and in which you accomplished something that you were happy with, and these experiences will spread throughout your life and will guide you in your future life. And that's exactly what happened.
Hmm.
You know, a lot of how we are and how we feel as humans depends on the thoughts that we have, what it is that we focus on. We've all had negative events in our life, and we've all had positive events in our life. And you certainly can learn from the negative ones, but if you're continually thinking about them, that's what you're going to produce in your life. The unconscious mind is target-oriented. When you have an image or a thought, you tend to move toward it. Just as an example, if you watch people when they're driving down the freeway, you'll notice a few seconds before they decide to change lanes because they start to drift to that side. And it's because they're thinking, well, maybe I'll change lanes over that way. Then if they make up their mind to do it, then maybe they put on their turn signal, maybe they don't, but they move over. So you can see that when they have the thought, the unconscious begins to manifest it immediately. And so you want that tendency in you working for you by thinking about the things that you want to accomplish and the kinds of things that you want to accomplish, as opposed to, say, for instance, what's stopping you or the horrible way that people treated you 15 years ago.
Hmm. because that's the past anyway, right?
Yeah.
Done is done.
Yeah, and it's not happening now unless it's happening in your mind.
Exactly.
And other people may have been at fault originally, but who's in control of the thoughts now? Who's doing it to you now? And the answer is, you know, sometimes we have thoughts that are more automatic in nature. They're difficult to control, and that's where hypnosis can come in, because we can get in there to the part of the mind that generates automatic thoughts and automatic behaviors and patterns and things, and have some influence.
How has it changed your life?
You know, it's interesting because that was brought home to me several years ago. My mother was in the hospital, and I sat in and talked with her at length because I was keeping her company. And she said to me at one point, she said, "What changed you from being the angry young man that you were?" And I hadn't realized that I'd changed. You know, it's like watching a child grow up. You don't see him grow from day to day, but if you see him every 6 months, you go, "Wow, he's grown." So I had moved from a very negative place and a bunch of negative attitudes in my life to one where, you know, my life is certainly not perfect, but I feel very much at cause in my life. I control what happens for the most part. I have, even the stuff that happens to me, I have a big effect on choosing how I can respond. I'm a lot more positive. I just feel like I'm so much more empowered.
Do you know what? I'm going to tell you something, and I probably shouldn't be, but I read a lot, right? And I've gotten into this whole, like, I read everything, but I read the other day about when people are, like, awakened, what you're talking about, like, being conscious of the fact that the things that you think about actually become reality.
Uh-huh.
Your reality, and that when somebody is awakened, they're recognizable to other people who have been awakened. But other people who aren't awakened, or maybe haven't, it's not that they're bad, it's just that they're not at that point yet.
Right.
I could tell that from the moment I started talking to you, because I could hear happiness.
Well, that's very nice of you to say.
Yeah. Can you give me a little history of hypnosis?
Sure. I mean, hypnosis has been around for thousands of years. The ancient Greeks had what they call sleep temples, and the Egyptians had some sort of routines that were vaguely similar to what we do today, from what we can tell. The history of, you know, quote-unquote modern hypnosis goes back, really, most people point it to Anton Mesmer. Now, if you've heard the phrase mesmerized, that comes from Mesmer, and he was kind of, he was in France around the time of the Revolution, and he had all kinds of mumbo-jumbo. He wore a pointy hat, he had lots of mirrors, and he wore purple, and he soaked people in bathtubs with iron rods sticking into the water, and he thought it was all this magnetic energy that flowed from one person to another, and that... And people would come to see him. He had thousands of people lined up to see him. And, of course, there was a lot of controversy in the medical community. And a commission was put together to study Mesmer, and it included Benjamin Franklin and one of the folks from a family called Guillotine, which you might imagine what they invented. And the commission studied Mesmer, and they said, essentially, these people are being healed by the power of the mind, and not this magnetism. So the idea was, he would bring these people in, he would do a ritual, and essentially they were there with the idea that this ritual would heal them, and that in fact it was the ritual and the suggestion, the idea of the healing, that healed them. And he had some remarkable results. And there were, there was controversy and whatnot, of course, around this, and there still continues to be. There are still people that believe in a healing energy that can be directed by another person. So it sort of split off into two areas. One area was the suggestion area through hypnosis, and another one was the healing energy area. And, of course, Freud studied it and wasn't very good at it and gave it up. And on to some modern-day pioneers, and they're thousands of hypnotherapists in the world today.
Wonderful. Thank you. That was a great little summary. What are the different stages of hypnosis?
There's a lot of argument about that. In fact, one of Mesmer's followers, Mesmer believed that he could magnetize objects by touching them. He got to be kind of an egocentric fellow, but he believed he could go up and touch a tree and then it would have magical healing powers, and somebody else could touch that tree and be healed. Well, one of his followers had magnetized a tree, and he noticed that a peasant boy had tied himself to the tree in the attempt to heal himself. And so he said, "Get down from there." And the boy got down from there. And as he continued, he wasn't really paying attention, but he eventually discovered the boy was following his commands. Everything that he told him to do, he followed. And yet when he came out of that state, he was unaware of anything that happened. He had total amnesia. And so the state got the name somnambulism, which means sleepwalking, although it's not sleepwalking, because you're aware, you can hear the voice, but you sort of automatically do what the person asks. And that is a state called somnambulism, which is what a lot of hypnotherapists believe is a state that is necessary for the maximum power of suggestions. And I should mention, by the way, that typically what happens if someone's under hypnosis and someone gives them a suggestion that they don't like, they immediately snap out of it. The other thing that they will often do is just ignore the suggestion. So I'm sure there's people out there that have seen shows of stage hypnotists with, people that are doing silly things. And the truth is, if you ever watch a stage hypnotist, what they usually do is they start with a lot of volunteers, and then they gradually throw people off stage until they find three or four or five people that really want to do that kind of thing. They enjoy the performing aspect of it. So they're not doing things against their will. And that is probably the biggest misconception about hypnosis, is that you can make people do stuff that they don't want to do.
Can you think under hypnosis?
Absolutely. You think very clearly.
So if I'm hearing something from somebody, a hypnotherapist, I can choose to resist it or allow it?
Yes. Now, in order to do that, what you do is you kind of activate your conscious mind again, and you consider it rationally, because the unconscious mind isn't really rational. It doesn't really think about things in a logical fashion. So if somebody gives you a suggestion that you don't like, you sort of activate your conscious mind again, and you go, "Hey, wait a second, do I want to do this or not? You know what, that doesn't sound good to me." And at that point, you're no longer really in hypnosis. So they've brought you out by making a suggestion that's disagreeable to you.
Okay, can hypnosis help stop smoking? Help somebody stop smoking?
Yes.
How effective is it?
The largest study ever done in New Scientist magazine in June of 2002. I could be wrong about that. Smoking was listed as the most, or hypnosis was listed as the most effective stop smoking method. The least effective was advice from a doctor. Now,
go figure.
This was what was called a meta study. So it's kind of comparing apples to oranges. It's really difficult to say. What they did is they took a look at all the studies they could find about the various methods of smoking cessation. And so this involved not only sessions with therapists, but self-hypnosis CD programs to stop smoking and so on. So it was the gamut.
Right. Now, how effective is hypnosis with weight loss?
I don't really know of any studies about hypnosis and weight loss, but it's the same thing. People who smoke cigarettes and who, for instance, overeat or eat the wrong things or don't exercise, they'll often tell you this: "I just ended up standing at the refrigerator, or I noticed my hand was moving to my mouth, or I picked up the phone, I answered the phone, and before I knew it, there was a cigarette in my mouth. It's automatic behavior. It's not something that they decide to do consciously. And that's why it's so difficult sometimes to change, because your unconscious mind has one set of instructions. Your conscious mind says, well, I ain't going to do that. I'm going to exercise, I'm going to eat right, I'm going to stop smoking. Well, these two sets of instructions battle it out. And in most cases, the unconscious mind wins because it's much more powerful. So hypnosis helps us to get into that part of the mind that carries the instructions and influence that part of the mind to say, hey, we don't want to do that, we want to do this. And the way that it does that usually is, you know, people overeat for a reason. They don't do it for no reason at all. They've learned at some point, you know, maybe they were lonely when they were a child and eating helped them feel more comfortable. You know, they felt empty and they felt fulfilled after they ate. Or maybe they smoked as a rebellion against their parents. So when they feel lonely or they feel like they need to rebel, well, they reach for those old habits. So that old behavior pattern is in there, even though it isn't working for them anymore. So if you can find out the motivation for the pattern and get in there and help their unconscious find some better way to achieve that need that they're trying to fill through this way that's having negative consequences for it, well, then everything kind of lines up. Because the unconscious mind, I mean, hypnosis has been used as, you know, people have done full surgery with hypnosis as the only anesthesia. So when the subconscious mind has the right motivation and the right set of instructions, it can really help you to, you know, if it can keep you from feeling a knife cutting through your abdomen, certainly it can reduce cravings for cigarettes.
Have you ever hypnotized somebody who wanted to be hypnotized because they had cancer, like a terminally ill, they were terminally ill and they wanted positive thoughts, like they wanted you to tell them that they weren't sick?
You know, it's a sticky wicket, because as a professional, you cannot claim, certainly, that hypnosis will cure cancer.
Of course not, right?
There have been plenty of studies that show that hypnosis helps reduce the pain for cancer patients. In fact, it's one of the most effective treatments there are. It can also reduce the side effects of chemotherapy and whatnot. And I will often tell people that come to me in a situation like that, I say, look, as long as we've got your subconscious there, why don't we give it some positive instructions? There's no guarantee that this is going to work at all. But, you know, it's free, and it's only going to take me a few seconds, so why don't I just throw in that we're going to maximize your healing capability and that all your resources are going to be aligned to take care of this as much as possible. But it would be irresponsible to, one, give people the wrong impression that you were doing medical work. Essentially, you have to work in conjunction with a doctor anyway when you do that kind of thing. There's certainly plenty of anecdotal evidence of people receiving all sorts of benefit from hypnosis. The responsible thing to do is not to claim those kind of benefits. Even though, let me tell you this, if I had cancer, I would immediately do hypnosis.
You know what? You can't go wrong when you're doing something positive for yourself. You don't have to claim. You don't have to think, well, I don't know.
But
I know exactly what you're saying.
Being the devil's advocate here, if I was sitting on the other side of the fence, I would say, you're giving people false hope and you're taking their money.
Right.
Now, essentially, I tell people that have medical conditions, you know, my job is to help you deal with this, to make it easier for you, maybe to reduce some of the symptoms, but my job is not to cure you. But, you know, we'll throw some suggestions in and we'll see what happens. And, I mean, there are cases, if you take the case of diabetes, for instance, mm-hmm. there you can do a lot with diabetes by lowering stress. Lowering stress changes your body chemistry, and your body chemistry, a diabetic's body chemistry reacts much more favorably when they are not in stress. So you can say to a diabetic, here's what we're going to do, here's the result that we hope will happen, and if that happens, you know, you may see these kind of results. But you don't go out there and say, we're going to cure your diabetes.
Right. It's the way you go about saying what you're going
to
say.
Exactly. I mean, you got to be professional, and you have to be responsible with the people that you talk to. And you have to say, you work with doctors, you get a referral from them, and, you know, you're not their doctor. I'm not a medical professional.
Right. So you were talking about stress. Now, I guess it's kind of reversed. The way I have it is, how does stress affect hypnosis? If you're really, really stressed, can you be hypnotized?
Hypnosis typically happens through relaxation, but it doesn't have to. If you focus on one thing very intently, well, then everything else drops out of your conscious awareness. And that single-minded focus is one form of hypnosis. So you can actually hypnotize somebody by having them focus on their stress or their pain. It's a technique that people sometimes use when they work with pain control, because if you go, relax, you're in a wonderful place, and they're going, my knee hurts. sometimes you actually go into whatever it is that they're focused on in order to help them.
Can somebody hypnotize themselves?
Sure.
So how would somebody go about doing that?
I've got a self-hypnosis technique, if you want to put a link to it, that anybody can read.
I would love to.
I don't have that link in front of me, but I can certainly email it to you when I email the picture.
Perfect, and I will put that on here. How long does it take?
A few minutes. It's like anything else. It's really a skill to be able to access hypnosis easily, and, you know, some people pick it up very quickly, and some people's minds get in the way, and it takes them a little longer.
So it's a matter of practice. With practice, you'll probably get better.
I think in almost all cases, that's true.
Okay. Now, I just have two more questions for you. How do I find the right hypnotherapist for me?
Well, I'm going to give you different advice than a lot of people would. And the reason is that I've looked at the studies. The hypnotists are not counselors, but the closest studies that have been done on the effectiveness of any kind of related profession have been done with counselors. And what matters most in the relationship, because really what's healing is the relationship between the hypnotherapist and the person that comes to see them. The biggest factor is rapport. Do you feel like you have a connection with somebody? Do you feel like they speak your language? Are you comfortable talking on the phone with them? So my advice is to find somebody that you're comfortable talking with. And there's the Yellow Pages. There's the National Guild of Hypnotists has a referral system. And if you go to ngh.net, NGH is a National Guild of Hypnotists, and you click around on that website, somewhere there's a state, you can either email the main information there and ask for a referral and tell them where you live, or you can, somewhere on the site, there's a listing of the state chapter presidents and their phone numbers, and you can call them up and say, hey, I live in Biloxi. Is there somebody that you know of out there that can help me? But comfort, rapport, a feeling of connection with the person is the most important thing. In terms of the rating, client satisfaction's rating, much, much more important than level of education or type of training.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, my last question is, what is a hypnosis script?
A hypnosis script is someone's attempt to put together a set of suggestions for a particular situation. Like, you might find a hypnosis script for weight loss. And, you know, they can be effective, but I sort of look at them this way. When I work with clients, I start to ask them what it is that they want to accomplish. That's where I start. And then I ask them what's stopping them. What are their motivations for achieving the change they want to change? What are their motivations for keeping the problem? In other words, if they overeat, what drives them to overeat? Because people have needs, and they're answering them with their habits. So I found that people are different, and people have different motivations for the same problem. Some people overeat for this reason. Some people smoke for that reason. You know, there are varying reasons. So how are you going to answer those needs with a script? A script will basically put together a set of suggestions that they have found that have been helpful for a lot of people. You know, maybe a hypnotherapist sees hundreds and hundreds of clients, and then they find, well, most people that want to lose weight run into these problems, so I'm going to make suggestions about those problems. So on that level, in the ability to give just direct suggestions to people that they're going to shed all that excess baggage and that they're going to eat healthy and begin to exercise, that's fine. And that's what a script is. But it's not going to get in there and speak to that particular person's motivations.
Is there anything else that you would like to add before the interview's over?
Yeah, I would. And that is that I'm very, very excited about the future of hypnosis in working with the medical profession. There are great studies out now that, for instance, show that hypnosis for surgical patients decreases hospital time, decreases the need for pain medication, they heal faster. They don't know if it's because they don't have the nasty anesthetic chemicals in their body or whether they're just healing faster. There's all sorts of applications for diabetes, for blood pressure, for cancer, and I hope that the next 10 to 15 years brings the hypnosis profession and the medical profession closer together in working with those things. A lot of the chronic conditions that the medical profession really has a hard time with, irritable bowel syndrome, a lot of the digestive problems, are really beginning to be shown as very susceptible to hypnotic treatment. So I would encourage everybody out there to look into that as much as they can. And also, the profession certainly needs good people. So if somebody wants some training in this area, they could contact me, and I'd be happy to point them in the right direction.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's really not too complex. Hypnotizing someone is easy. You just need to learn the process of how to properly give suggestions and how to ask the right questions to find out people's motivations so that you can speak to their individual needs. And of course, there's advanced stuff if you want to do pain control and whatnot.
I am so sorry. I'm looking at one of your websites, the organization that you're in, the WA State Chapter?
Yeah, NGH, the National Guild of Hypnotists, Washington State Chapter.
Oh, there it is. I couldn't tell where that was. And I'm so sorry, seeing something on here about painless childbirth, and can I ask you about that real quick?
Sure.
Because that sounds real interesting to me. Could you explain how you do that, or how does that work?
A lot of the way that the mind reacts to pain is due to perception. There's a tremendous amount that you can affect and interpret and reinterpret a pain signal. And so hypnosis, for one, helps you to do that. It can change the pain into another sensation, for instance, pressure and whatnot. But a big problem with childbirth in this country, let me ask you, when you've seen a television show, for instance, mm-hmm. about childbirth, what happens?
I freak out.
What happens on the screen? Do the women have a comfortable experience?
No,
they always scream, they're always pushing real hard. So it's been drummed into all of our heads that childbirth necessarily has to be very difficult. Now, if you go on the internet and do some research, you'll find out that there's a percentage of women that just have these comfortable childbirths. But you've never heard of it once. So the first thing that you do when you're working with somebody, you begin to work with them on the attitude that, you know what, maybe this doesn't have to be like it is on television. Maybe there are women out there that experience this in a comfortable way. There are women that have have some pain, but have much less pain. And so you start to work on the attitudes, and then you teach them how to generate anesthesia for themselves, which can be done hypnotically, and it takes some time. But I'll tell you what, it's a much more rewarding and pleasant experience when you can go through it. It also gives the control, much more control to women.
No, I think the way you're approaching it is very intelligent. I think a lot of people could benefit from this, and the more that people take this seriously, the quicker they'll snap and, you know, take it more seriously, too. I think it's great stuff. I mean, I'm learning so much. You know, when my husband and I decided to have a kid, my goodness, I'm loaded with information. It's great.
Most of the people that practice hypnosis with childbirth, they'll offer some sort of informational class that you can attend and just see if you like them and if you feel comfortable with it, and you get even more information.
I'm going to do that, and I'm looking at your Hypnosis 101.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to get that.
Well,
that's really interesting.
That's why I do these interviews, because I want to sell one course.
No, probably going to get a lot. You've got some really good credentials, and it looks really good. I mean, I saw this. I got my program from Keith yesterday, and it rocks, he says.
Yeah, who wrote that?
Chris Morrison.
Chris, yes, lives in Texas.
See, he lives in Texas, too, like me. Get certified in hypnosis. That's awesome. This is interesting. This is great. Well, anyway, it was such a pleasure talking to you.
My pleasure as well.
Oh, yeah, and thank you so much. And if you don't mind, you're such a great interview that I'd love to keep you as one of our contacts if we can.
Oh, that would be great. Just give me a call. We'll set something up.
Thank you so much, Keith. You're a great man. You have a wonderful day. Good week. Thank you.
Okay. We'll talk to you soon, Tanya.
All right, cool. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello, this is Keith Livingston. Thanks for joining us for this interview. Once again, if you'd like to learn more about hypnosis or NLP, please visit hypnosisnow.com, hypnosis101.com, or advancingideas.com. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye now.